This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer on the road again, Willie Nelson style in Morgantown, ready to call some college baseball tomorrow. Going to talk more college baseball here with Quentin Mills later on in this hour, Jensen. Also, Chris Meaney is going to join the program, talk all things Stanley Cup playoffs, maybe getting closer to the Stanley Cup finals as well. Get our best bets in there, but we got to do a little business here on the NBA side with Game 6 tonight. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
This feels like it could be the Jalen Williams, AJ Mitchell game, and those guys might not even play, in that if OKC, as 3.5-point road dogs, can get this win tonight, then you give those two guys in particular almost a full week to play. Jensen, I'm not a doctor, nor are you. We have to play one sometimes on this show. If I'm guessing, and if you're betting tonight on this game, and you're betting OKC, I think you have to bet it with the idea that you're not going to have either one of those two guys in the lineup. I wonder if they feel like they're playing with a little bit of house money tonight and roll the dice, not play those guys, potentially win it without them, and maximize their time off before potentially a game one in the NBA Finals against the Knicks.
Yeah, again, the way that the supporting cast has been in the absence of Jalen Williams and now a game without AJ Mitchell, it certainly goes and lends you back to, hey, Alex Caruso, can he potentially be the most valuable part of this Thunder run, at least in the Western Conference Finals? Well, when he is doing the things that he did in Game 5, it feels like the Spurs have not had an answer for that. Will they tonight? I think the physicality returns again, the way that the Thunder took the fight to Victor Wembanyama. The fatigue is starting to set in. And then also on the Spurs side, what do you get from Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle? Can you make it stand up? And if Wemby is not his prolific scoring self, where does the rest of those contributions come from? Boy, the Thunder feel like they have all the momentum, but I agree with you. Regardless of healthy or not healthy Jalen Williams and or AJ Mitchell, it feels like the Thunder momentum could be just enough here tonight.
And let's table the second part of that conversation about the physicality of this game potentially tonight, because I want to get to that in a second. But let's hear from our boys here in a numbers game, because Gil and Kelly kind of talk through what you were just discussing here with Alex Caruso. And that, look, we get it. Shea's the big favorite here to be the Western Conference MVP at minus 360. We've seen some upsets before in these type of votings. If you want to go back to Andre Iguodala when he won the finals MVP and everybody thought Steph Curry was going to get it. Maybe there's some nuance to this award. Is there a pathway for Alex Caruso? Let's hear from the guys from a numbers game.
Are we going to get lazy in this and just go with one of the stars? Probably. But, like, we're talking about odds here, right? We're talking about 50-1, 40-1. And, like,
I'll counter that counter by saying it's also not the NBA Finals, right? It's the Western Conference Finals.
That too.
So I wonder if voters would be more likely to bet for the rando.
Okay, and it's fairer for us to wonder, because we don't have a ton of history on this
right? We don't. I'm just talking.
I think that's fair. I also think it's fair to wonder, is it easier to, for the anti-Shea people, is it easier to show up now instead of the finals? Because you don't want to ruin, like, an NBA Finals award, MVP award?
It's a great question, and I'd say this, getting back to what I was discussing with Iguodala and Steph Curry back then, when it was just, you know, the NBA final here, and that there feels like that might have been a stain, if you will, that we look back in that and go, man, that was Steph Curry. We all know it was Steph Curry, and yet they got cute with it and gave it to the other AI. So maybe you can get by with that in the Western Conference. Remember, Caruso had 22 off the bench, but he did score zero. It's still hard for me to get to a guy that did not score in Game 4. But let's just say, well, theoretically, to get that 35-1 home that Kelly and Gil are breaking down, what does that look like tonight? Does that look like Caruso going off for 30? Because if that's the case, you might want to look at a player prop here on the Caruso side, play the over, if you really think he's live at 35-1.
Yeah, and again, I think another way to make the same bet, let's assume that the Thunder can close it out tonight. Dave, if you're looking at Alex Caruso props, his line is 11 or 10 and a half. OppAI not as bullish, at least on him tonight. They have him projecting for a little under 8.5 points. But another way to make a correlated play, I think if you're looking at alternate point totals, I'll tee it up for you. How many points would Caruso need in a series clincher? Okay, let's assume the Thunder win tonight. In a series clincher, in this scenario, would you rather take the Western Conference Finals MVP odds at 35-1 or play, for instance, an alternate point total? Does he have to have at least 20? Does he have to have like four threes? You know, something, you see where I'm going here? Like if that's a way just to give you more outs instead of relying on the human voting factor of, oh, we're just going to go with SGA because he's the star. I think the boys are onto something there. And that's how I would get different from the field. I would look at alternate point totals. I would look at alternate three-pointers made. If you want to put a little parlay together, that might be a more advantageous way to get different from the field and maybe take that human element out of it.
That's exactly the way. In order for this to hit, realistically, he's got to get to 25 tonight. Like, he's got to be, I don't want to say the leading scorer, because Shea still had 32 when Caruso had 22, but most of those came at the foul line, right? So it was not a good shooting night for SGA in game five. So he got by, and look, I'm not saying that the calls all went his way. He forced a lot of those calls for the officials to raise their arm. Caruso's, what I like about Caruso is he's one of the few guys, Jensen, that I've noticed he's not scared to go at Wemby in the lane. I'm not saying it's always going to work out that way, but it's not like he's one of those guys that kind of shies away from that contact. He's still driving in the lane, and he got to the foul line a couple times too to get to that 22. So I'm looking for aggression from a guy like Alex Caruso. Now, that the second part of this conversation that I wanted to table for now and get back to it right here is the physicality of this game. Now, I talked about it with Victor Wembanyama, that as he was going out at the end of game five, he whispered to some of the bench guys as they were coming onto the floor. And then we saw two really hard fouls, and some would say dirty, on Jared McCain in particular. And Jared McCain spoke about that after the game. And he said, I said, hey, why'd you do that? And they said, we got another one coming for you. So they didn't shy away from the hit, the code red, if you will, that Wemby put on these guys. So what I'm getting at, Jensen, is wonder how physical it's going to be. And then we have to get to the officiating of this game, how it's going to be called, because that would really affect a total. If you like the over, you're looking for that whistle and not the play-ons. Is there any way we can anticipate that? Because if Wemby put out a hit, and it's out there in social media for you guys to take a look at it if you want to get it, go down that rabbit hole a little bit, I would wonder if you're retorting tonight with that quote-unquote physical play against Wemby down low.
Okay, with that in mind, and again, this is why we highly encourage you to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. The Opta AI projections, like if we were looking, you know, just as we are without checking what the numbers would be, would you rather tonight with your idea in mind there, like let's say they let him play. Let's say they let him play, and you're not going to get a dozen free throw attempts there from Wemby. Would you rather play his point prop under, or would you rather play a points, rebounds, assists under? And I'll just give you the idea of where I'm going here. Wemby's line for points, I believe, is about 26. He's projected for about 25.5. Points, rebounds, assists, though, 46 is the line, projected barely for 40.5 at this point. So, again, you know, just a different way to kind of attack what we would think the Thunder try and do here. If they let him play, and I believe Scott Foster is the head official for tonight, quote unquote, the extender.
Oh, the extender.
So we'll see if that, you know, kind of plays a little bit of a different fiddle for how we take this out. To me, the play would be an under on Wemby points, rebounds, assists. If they're keeping him out of the paint, kind of trying to get him, you know, moved and stay at the perimeter where he was ineffective in game five. So something to think about here. Again, another just prop wager to try and attack this. I still would say the over, again, for what it's worth, Dave. Yep. just in the postseason, these two teams have been over teams. Oklahoma City 10-3 to the over, San Antonio 10-6 to the over. It feels like we're going to get some whistles. It feels like we're going to get another 115, 120 point effort from whoever wins this game.
You know, it is amazing though to think that Caruso would be the second betting choice for OKC to win the Western Conference MVP. And I do feel like, Jensen, there's this growing sentiment you hear in the flopper chants whenever SGA gets a foul call in San Antonio. There does feel to be some sort of movement anti-Shea, right? Like, oh, this guy is, he's not really earning it. He's getting, he's getting all the whistles now. And I don't know if that plays into voters' mentalities here. Caruso, you don't get that feel, right? You feel like that whatever that guy gets, he's getting because he's earning it. They're getting 22 the hard way, if you will. And maybe, you know, Shea's getting 32 the easier way. So it would be interesting if Caruso went off tonight and knocked down, as you're saying, four threes. You play that adjusted total over 2.5 at probably over 2-1 dollars there that you could get on three-pointers. I wonder if that narrative would change if Caruso felt like the X factor in a clinching game six on the road. But look, I don't know that I'm running to the window to make that bet because I do think if they're winning game six tonight, Shea is Shea as the reigning defending MVP and they're the reigning defending champs and all those sort of things. So it will be interesting narrative. Let's see if it could possibly get home. Again, second betting choice right now is Caruso 35-1 to win MVP. When we come back, let's talk about why you are in Morgantown, why we're wearing these shirts today for college baseball. Quentin Mills joins the program again. Can't wait to talk all things college baseball next right here on Beeson Buffalo. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN. By the Books, going to have Chris Meany join us here at the end of this program to talk all things Stanley Cup playoffs. But right now, what a pleasure it is to welcome back to the program Quentin Mills with the insiders of College Baseball Central, contributor to the Daily, to the Diamond Report. Give him a follow on X at Q Milly. That's with three L's and two Y's. Joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Quentin, great to have you back on. We're excited. We're both, Jensen's obviously there in Morgantown getting ready to do some calls. We're rocking our college baseball gear here. Can't wait to see who gets to Omaha. What are your thoughts as we embark now again on the college baseball playoffs? What are your overriding kind of themes as we've now actually got the field set and begin play tomorrow?
Well, I think the theme is no longer Christmas in July. It's when regionals start. I'm excited, boys. We get to talk it. You know, I kind of want to start where Jensen's at. Morgantown, I thought that is an absolute brutal regional. A couple others. I think Chapel Hill was probably the toughest, in my opinion, followed by Hattiesburg is there. And, you know, Gainesville, I think that's an underrated tough place. You have Skylar Mead and Troy going in there, a little chip on their shoulder to prove something. Miami, big rivalry there in Florida. So I think we have a lot of really good baseballs. I think you can make some cases for some three seeds to be two and maybe some fours to three. So I think it's a really competitive field. And then talking about Jensen, I think there's three teams that could win that region there. Listen, I know people didn't think Kentucky should be in there, but you give those guys in Mingione a chip on their shoulder, they have something to prove, as well as Wake Forest after the coaching change, everything that went on there. And then West Virginia, finally sliding into the host spot, a very tough place. It's a rowdy crowd there in Morgantown. They like to party. They like to get after it. Fantastic baseball with Steve Saban. So I think it's going to be very, very good regional play all weekend long.
Brother, it's going to be insanity here at noon Eastern, and that's just the appetizer, and it's a good one. You mentioned Kentucky-Wake Forest. It might be the best pitching matchup on paper. Jackson Jelkin, the fireballer there from Kentucky. Chris Lavonis, who's been unbelievable for the Demon Deacons. So if you like high-octane fastballs and free air conditioning, that's going to be a good one. I wanted to take you to two other regions that I find incredibly intriguing. First in Lawrence, the Kansas Jayhawks, a first-time host in their program history. They're going all out to try and get as many kids and as many fans into that ballpark. But it's Arkansas and Missouri State, two teams that absolutely despise each other. We had Kyle Peterson on the program yesterday, and he brought that up as well. But is there a chance for that one seed to fall there in Lawrence? Because by the numbers, Arkansas, the shortest shot right now to come out of the Lawrence regional as well.
I love Arkansas. They're playing hot at the right time, kind of that hot, cold, hot theory. They just started a little slow. The bats are rolling by a guy named Zach Stewart. By the way, don't pitch to him because he's going to send it to the next stadium in the next state over. Lawrence, listen, it's a great thing. It's great for baseball to kind of get a new team to kind of host. It shows they're on the rise. I do think Arkansas is going to come out of there. I got them at a good price plus money. Now they're starting to kind of, like you said, be the favorite. They just have the pitching. Listen, Dom Vaguely for Kansas is kind of, in my opinion, all they have. They have the bats, but, man, it's really hard to hit against the guys named Gabe Gack or Hunter Dietz, you know, Cole Gibler, all weekend long. Missouri State, like you said, not fond of the Arkansas Razorbacks. The feeling is mutual. They split 1-1, but I will say this. They're playing against the midweek version of Arkansas typically throughout the season. They haven't faced the Hunter Dietz. They haven't faced the Cole Gibblers, the Gabe Gackles. So, can you know, as great as Caden Bogendahl is and some of those guys, Bogenpool, can they do that against top-tier SEC pitching? I just don't think there's enough juice there in the tank for the Missouri State team. So I do think Arkansas comes out of the Lawrence bracket.
I want to ask you about the Chapel Hill bracket selfishly here because, again, before the season began, I took an extreme long shot flyer on East Carolina. They're the third betting choice to come out of this bracket here. My alma mater, VCU, is the long shot there, about 17-1. Carolina odds on at minus $2, and then the Vols sitting there at the second spot. Any chances for, say, an East Carolina and or a VCU to upset the apple cart, or do you think that the chalk holds here with North Carolina?
I do think North Carolina wins, but I don't think it's as easy as people think it's going to be. I think East Carolina certainly has a shot. Those teams upset people on the daily, so that's never hard to rule them out. And then Tennessee, same thing. Very top end on the home run list through college baseball. They have a good staff. They have Tegan Coons. They have Evan Blanco, who's been in Omaha when he was a Virginia Cavalier. He kind of knows what to expect in playoff baseball. Landon Mack should be available if they need him. They have a great bullpen. Tennessee baseball under Josh Elander has been there as well. They understand the momentum. They understand the position they're in. And Chapel Hill, listen, last year Matt Grissa tweeted out, hey, it's a lock when they beat Arizona 15-2 and they choked back-to-back games in the Super Regional. So choking is capable in Chapel Hill, but I do think this year they get it done and they advance to Super Regional. So we'll see.
Brother, I was there. We thought it was two and Q covering that Super Regional there. And boy, oh boy, what a rebuttal it was for the Wildcats to shock the country and punch their ticket to Omaha. With that in mind, would we also have another potential shocker in the Lincoln Regional? That is a really fascinating matchup. Save for my game that I'll have on ESPN2 at noon on Friday between Wake and Kentucky, you might circle Ole Miss Arizona State as maybe or arguably the best game of that first day with the way that Ole Miss and Arizona State are playing. Nebraska is that one seed there in Lincoln. Three-team viability to come out of there. I think it's a pretty even regional with the way that got drawn.
I do. I think you're going to see Cole Carlone and Hunter Elliott. Remember, Hunter Elliott won a 2022 national championship with the Ole Miss Rebels, so he's been there too, and he is their guy in the postseason. Cole Carlone has pitched excellent this season. Like you said, it's probably the best pitching matchup they won. I think Ole Miss is going to come out of that one. I like the bats. I think they have the pitching depth. Cade Townsend, Hunter Elliott, Taylor Rabe. Bullpen's not bad. They have some absolute studs at the plate who can just hit the ball anytime they want. I think it's going to be a lot of runs. I think Ole Miss comes out on top. I did bet that ticket at plus 170.
I am curious, too. We'll see once the totals get posted tomorrow. Obviously, we've got lines for the games to begin tomorrow here. like looking at Kentucky, they're a small underdog here against Wake Forest. There are some tightly lined games. What will you be looking at from a totals perspective? Is it really about the conditions, or do we get nervy here with some of these teams and maybe look to some unders early, generally speaking?
I think you really got to figure out the pitching matchups and the weather. For instance, in the Southeast, it's going to be a ton of rain. Could that throw off some guys, delays? Now you have your starter come get pulled. You're in the bullpen early, things like that. Then you go into a place like Lawrence where, you know, that place you just hit a pop fly and it somehow gets out. There's a couple band boxes that are hosting. So I think you really kind of have to factor that. And guess what? At College Baseball Insiders, we got that stuff covered for you in the regional guide. We tell you the weather. We tell you the stadiums that are hitter-friendly parks, pitcher-friendly parks, and then we update the matchups. So I don't want to cop out, but I think you have to look at it as a whole and really take each matchup individually and figure out, okay, is this going to be a ton of runs? What have they done throughout the season? And then take, you know, all that into account before you make that bet.
Cannot reinforce that enough. Again, collegebaseballinsiders.com. It is as comprehensive a breakdown, all 16 regionals, scouting reports for every team. Buddy, you helped me get my homework done last night, so I did not have to burn the midnight oil on some of these other squads around the country. Let me ask you about a couple other places and maybe a little bit farther down here. Do we have upset potential maybe in Tuscaloosa? I know a lot of people like Oklahoma State there as a two seed. Coastal Carolina made the College World Series final last year. They're the two seed in the Tallahassee Regional. Florida State, the number 10 national seed. Either of those regionals have upset potential in your mind as well?
I haven't taken on Oklahoma State. Second in the country in home runs. They're not afraid to hit the ball out of the park. And they're playing really good baseball right now. They really figured it out towards the back half of the season. Hudson Barrett, Ethan Lund, just a great 1-2 combo. Bullpen starting to pick it up a little bit. Listen, I think KP kind of spot on yesterday. Said Alabama, phenomenal season for Coach Vaughn. But did they kind of really outkick their coverage this year? To me, they faced a bad Florida. I think that sweep's overinflated. I think, you know, you look at this team, they're a good team. Would I be surprised if Bama makes it? No. Would I also be surprised if they lost? No, because I think they got a tough number two seed in their bracket. Then we talk about Coastal. That's an interesting one. I gave that out preseason with you guys. I still have some belief in there. You can never rule out Kevin Schnall and the Shots there. They're always a tough thing. It really depends. Do they get to 2025 Camp Flukie? Can those guys overcome a hostile environment? Florida State's a very tough place to play. It's going to be packed. But remember, there's no Miles Bailey, all right? That's their guy. They've played pretty well down the stretch. But again, Coastal's not, you know, new to this whole playoff thing. They're used to being the underdog. They're used to being not a one seed. So for them, they're going to come in motivated with a chip on their shoulder because people are like, hey, they're fading. They struggled through end the season. Can they pick it back up? You got to believe in the Shots. Ultimately, I think the pitching for Florida State is going to overcome that, but I think it's going to be one of those where they could certainly come out. It's very tough for Florida State to come out, in my opinion.
Only 30 seconds. I got to ask you this, though, Quentin. If I'm looking at UCLA and Georgia Tech as co-favorites at 4-1, which ticket for the short shot would you rather be sitting on?
Georgia Tech all day long. UCLA, quote-unquote, plays with their food too much. They come just eighth inning, they try to turn the switch on, and that's fine and dandy on the West Coast. But when you start going against the Georgia, the Floridas, the big-time teams, you might get caught that one time where that switch just doesn't turn that light on just quick enough.
Absolutely love it. Play the Ramblin' Wreck there if you go looking for the short shots at 4-1. Q, Millie, 3 L's, 2 Y's. Quentin, we appreciate you as always, my man. Can't wait to get this thing started tomorrow. Our best bets, they're up next right here. VEASAN by the books.
You're tuned in to VEASAN by the books right here on VEASAN.
Clock is ticking on one of the best VEASAN Pro offers of the entire calendar year. It's your final week, though, to get a full year VEASAN Pro, which is normally $240 for just $199. And when you sign up today, we're going to give you 2 months extra for free. That's 14 months of VEASAN Pro, and you're going to get that for less than 50 cents a day. So what do you get with that when you use the promo code PRO? All of our daily best bets from our hosts and guests like Quentin Mills that we just had on talking college baseball. Real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa. AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis. 24/7 live video plus full show replays in the VEASAN Watch app. Plus all of our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year for the next 14 months. This offer will expire May 31st. Don't wait any longer. Head over to VEASAN.com/subscribe. Use that promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com Patreon.com/subscribe. Jensen, we have a major upset alert that I'm sure Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidwin will discuss next here on A Numbers Game. Juan Manuel Cerundolo was basically a massive underdog. Yannick Sinner was minus 10,000 to win 100 in this opening round matchup against Juan Manuel Cerundolo. Right now, as we stand, it is 3-love in the fifth set for the Argentine, and he is now minus 720 in the betting market. Oof. That's right. You can get Yannick Sinner at plus 508, right now. But remember, he's down two breaks in this fifth and final set at Roland Garros on the red clay. I can't trill my R's. It's the best I can do, Jensen. But this would be a shock out there in the betting market here if you had Sinner in the semi, Sinner to win this thing. He is now plus 508, down two breaks, 3-love in the fifth and final set. And again, Jensen, I'm sure Gil and the boys and Kelly will have much more to discuss here at the top of the hour.
As they say in France, oui, oui. And that might be where Sinner's going a little wee-wee right now. That is monumental if that thing gets home. Unbelievable development across the pond.
Yeah, so we'll keep our eye on that. But again, right now it's jumped even more. It's now minus 930 for the Argentine, and Yannick Sinner is plus 630. So the number just keeps going up, up, up as this fifth set continues. We're going to get to our best bets here. And we talked about with this OKC matchup tonight here in game six. That really, you're looking at the total specifically. You might want to know how the game's going to be officiated. For those that missed it, and maybe you turned off the TV because this looked like a blowout and are pulling the starters at the end of game five. And you saw Wemby go over to some of the reserves that were coming in, and he was whispering in their ear. It's all out there on social media if you want to take a look for yourself. And the reason why we bring this up is there were two really hard fouls on Jared McCain. Remember, McCain was the starter, which was a surprise start. He had 20 points in that big victory. And it looked like people were interpreting this as Wemby kind of put out the code red here in a few good men parlance. And then there were some hard fouls that happened to McCain in garbage time. Now, we're not making this up. You can hear from McCain himself because he talked about the end of game five and what exactly transpired there.
Yeah, that was crazy. I didn't expect it, obviously. We were at the free throw line too, and I was like, why'd you do that, man? I'm just asking a question. And he was like, I got another one for you too. I'm like, all right, damn, let me to the corner real quick. Let's finish this game out. But, you know, it's all in competition, so got to respect it. But definitely wasn't aware that my team told me after, like, just get to the corner at the end of the game like that.
Yeah. There was a hit out on McCain, right? So you just get stand in the corner because they're coming after you here. He handled it very well, Jensen, I thought. Big smile on his face. But you're asking the guys at the free throw line, why'd you do that? So something's going on. The reason why we bring that up is I wonder if that will affect the officiating to begin the game today where the officials say, Jensen, we're going to take control of this thing quickly because we're not going to allow for the physicality in a possible closeout game, and that could get you to more free throws. And that can get you to over potentially 219.
We got Scott Foster as the lead official. I do believe he is nicknamed the extender because he does not let series end in those games that he officiates. So whether that's a ratings play or not, we shall see. Again, I don't have a convincing take on the side. My convincing take is the total. I still think we go over that again. Bears repeating, Oklahoma City 10-3 to the over this postseason, San Antonio 10-6. Teams in this series, Dave, that have won four of the five games, 122 points or more. So, you know, as far as officiating goes, there's been plenty of trips to the charity stripe. I mean, we all remember the second quarter in game five. It was just ridiculous. An absolute parade getting to the line. Okay, OptAI, some very good little props here, and specifically targeting Dylan Harper. Top of the AI prop, almost a 30% edge, is the 12 or more points assist for Dylan Harper. Off the AI projecting him upwards of almost 16 in that category there. Also looking at its points, rebounds, assist, 16 or more for Dylan Harper, minus $1.22 at DraftKings. Opt AI projecting him for nearly 20. So again, we talk supporting cast here for the Spurs. We know that Wemby is going to have to be his Superman self, but who else can step up? It was Stephon Castle last time. Can Dylan Harper be that guy? De'Aaron Fox. We'll see what that looks like. But those are a couple of props to put out to people. If you're looking and not as convinced on the side or total here, some ways to go ahead and attack this game tonight.
Hey, Knicks fans, we haven't forgotten about you. If you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network, if you're listening in SiriusXM Channel 158 or watching on YouTube TV, we've got numbers for game one that's already up. Oh, wait. Well, who are they playing? You don't have an opponent yet. Well, got you covered there, too. If it's OKC, game one Wednesday night, OKC is 6.5-point favorites against the Knicks. That total sitting at about 216.5. If San Antonio wins tonight and then wins a game seven, Saturday back in OKC, Wednesday night, they would be 4.5-point favorites over the Knicks. So, Jensen, what the market is telling us right now is that OKC, 2 points to the better over San Antonio. So whoever the Knicks play, they're either going to be 4.5-point dogs in game one or 6.5-point dogs in game one. We'll see if that changes based on injuries, the way, you know, people like to bet sometimes on what they see last. But is that, what do you find about that when you see 6.5 for OKC, but 4.5-point favorites, whether it's San Antonio or OKC hosting game one against the Knicks?
Doesn't matter to me right now because we still need to see what injury issues will be there. And obviously with that'll change. For me, it'll be more about understanding how much do I want to monetize my 287-1 ticket on the Knicks to win the finals, parlay with the Yankees to win the World Series. I am debating just letting my 16-1 on the Knicks to win the finals ride through game one. My hope would be that the Knicks win game one, and then I could come back on a much better price on either the Thunder or the Spurs there in game two, or I should say on the series price, and then kind of be done with it. So a couple of things to figure out here in the next handful of days once we get the culmination of this Western Conference Finals. Did want to throw it out, Dave. It is an abbreviated Major League slate. I don't really have any feel yet. Only one prop I played. I did play Paul Skene's 7 or more strikeouts here against the Chicago Cubs. He's due for a positive start, and I think he gets there tonight. Opta AI has him just a tad over 7 strikeouts, so I'll take him to record that. That's my only Major League Baseball play. Did want to get this out to people before the regionals start tomorrow. Since 1999, Dave, if you're looking to play futures markets, and especially to win a regional market, 66% of regional hosts have advanced to super regionals. So those number one seeds, all 16 of them, since 1999. So that's a fairly good sample. 66, so two-thirds of those regional hosts advanced to super regionals. And if you're looking at College World Series futures, 70% of super regional hosts advance to Omaha. So again, before those games start tomorrow, that's something to factor in. And then one other nugget for you. Since we've gone to the four-team regional format back in 99, 93% of regional winners won their opening game. So if you want to wait until Saturday for maybe a futures market, you'll have that 1-0 versus 1-0 game on that Saturday start, whether it's in the morning or afternoon or at night. That's another great winning. 93% of regional winners won their opening game. So again, you'll have two teams in each region to kind of cherry pick from with that regard. So just some of those percentages if you're looking to get into the futures market here for the College World Series.
Very quickly, back to game six tonight in San Antonio. The commissioner of the league, Adam Silver, did chime in about this flopping, and he talked about how the teams now are being coached basically to sell these calls, and he talked about the officiating and could they do a better job of on that front. Of course they can. I wonder if there's any conversation with the officials before tonight's game, because what have been the two talks of the league this year? Tanking and flopping. That feels like the big central themes here so far in the NBA. That's not what Adam Silver wants as the commissioner of the league, but that's where we are as a collective dialogue. We're going to have more dialogue about the Stanley Cup playoffs with Chris Meaney. He's going to rejoin the program next. Is there any life left north of the border? That's next right here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books on this Thursday morning. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis coming at you. Always enjoy our conversations with Chris Meaney, talking all things Stanley Cup playoffs, writer, editor at NHL.com. Give him a follow on X at Chris Meaney, and joins us once again here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Chris, we hold the Stanley Cup playoffs in very high esteem, arguably the best out of the big four when it comes to all the playoff systems here. Now we get a sweep with VGK. It looks like a foregone conclusion in the East. Do we need the Stanley Cup final to kind of relift our spirits of this, if this has been a little bit underwhelming here, getting to the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, perhaps. I think if you're a Colorado fan, you're probably what happened, in just over a week got swept against the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Canadians, who started the series strong against Carolina. Maybe it was a little bit of a rust factor there for the Hurricanes in game one. It's been all Carolina, heavy Hurricanes over the past three games, especially over the last two in Montreal on the road for the Hurricanes. So it does look like we're set up for Carolina and Vegas. And you know what? Honestly, you know, there's some people talking about how maybe it'll be just low event, kind of boring. I think it's going to be really good if it is indeed those two teams. And it certainly does look that way. I mean, these are two very stingy teams at 5-5, but, you know, they can come at you in waves. You know, you look at Vegas, three lines that can score. The addition of Carlson has really kind of just helped them down the middle of the ice here over the past, you know, handful of games. And then Carolina, I mean, we can see the relentless pressure. Probably learned a thing or two from the Florida Panthers over the past couple of years in the conference finals. So it, the conference finals hasn't been super competitive, but I think that we're in for a really good treat in the final.
All right, let's kind of take the autopsy of last night, because, Chris, it was just an absolute blitz from Carolina. Three goals early, and the Bell Center, you could hear a pin drop in there, and some of the reactions of the fans there is like, I cannot believe what I just saw. Frederik Andersen really has not had to wash the sweater. There's not been a lot of traffic in front of him. Carolina's taken advantage of a lot of high danger chances. Is it simply put, this has been so one-sided because of how elite defensively Carolina is, or is it just a young Montreal team that might be running out of gas right now?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. When you look at the Canadians, 18 games here in the playoffs in roughly 40 days. Look at the Hurricanes, 12 games in roughly 40. I mean, that's part of it. You take care of business when you're Carolina. You know, you have the number one seed. You get those, you know, quote-unquote easier matchups, two sweeps in the opening round. And that's certainly been a benefit for them. And then you look at the Canadians, you talk about the young age, the youngest in the playoffs, the second youngest in the NHL, had to go through those first two series against division rivals in seven, right? There was an opportunity for Montreal to close with the Lightning in six at home, didn't do it. There was an opportunity for the Canadiens to close the Sabres at home in six, didn't do it. And you know, it's good to have that, I suppose to play those seven games. It's good for the, you know, that core. You take a lot from that, but it also kind of, it bites down the road a little bit. We're seeing a very aggressive team in Carolina that has a lot of legs. They've been stingy all year long. Not surprised to see them dominate the ozone possession and the shot attempts. It's what they did in the first two rounds as well. But yeah, it's, I mean, the shot attempts at 5-5 in the series are 270 to 155. The shots are 111 to 54. The scoring chances are 123 to 61. And you referenced the high danger chances significantly in favor of the Carolina Hurricanes over the last two games on the road, 32-8. So they have dominated play all over the place. The PK has been essentially perfect here in the postseason. And as you mentioned, Freddie Andersen hasn't had to do a whole lot in this series apart from round one, and now he has three shutouts. So a little bit of both. The Hurricanes are just a really good 5-5 team. They have been for years, and you can certainly see they have a lot more energy. The Canadians do look like a team that they just don't have that spark. They don't have the energy. And you mentioned the Bell Center yesterday. You give three goals in roughly 3 minutes, and it was pretty quiet after that.
Chris, it was interesting because we were talking a little bit about Conn Smythe here. Mitch Marner is the favorite at plus $1.65. Freddie Andersen is now the second betting choice here at plus 250. And Chris Ebert on Twitter chimed in and said, you know, Boston gave Ray Bourque a parade for his Avs win when he won the Cup. Will Toronto do the same for Mitch Marner? I don't think so, Chris. It feels like some bad blood has been the leftover residue there. But what about Mitch being the favorite to win Conn Smythe here for Vegas? Is there other capabilities in the Carter Hart situation and maybe leading up to his great play here? Would writers really want to vote for him? How much does that play in to this kind of narrative street award?
Yeah, interesting with Marner. I wonder if they do have, if they do win the Cup, maybe he'll bring it down Yonge Street and it'll be mixed feelings, certainly downtown Toronto. I used to live in the area. I know that there certainly would be some mixed feelings there, but what a story for Marner. And, you know, I kind of shouted him out in the opening round. Vegas was a team I had going to the Stanley Cup final. And I really thought that he had some decent moments in Toronto. I mean, the spotlight is certainly bright there in Toronto. And, you know, getting away from just a change of scenery has certainly helped him out. And I think he should be the favorite. He's leading the playoffs in points, primary assists, shorthanded points. He's been fantastic. But you mentioned Carter Hart and 12-4 with a .924 save percentage. He's got a 2.22 goals against average. He's been essentially perfect over the last six games and .948, 6-0 over that span with a 1.65 goals against average. And we just talked about the Hurricanes and the relentless pressure. So he is going to see a lot of rubber. There is a scenario where he continues this and maybe he faces 30, 35 shots. I know Vegas kind of suppresses shots, but there is a scenario where he faces a lot of rubber in the finals and he's leaned on for a couple of victories and he all of a sudden he is in the conversation. I could see him moving into like a 3-1, a 4-1 in terms of odds to win the Conn Smythe. And Jack Eichel's just a couple points behind as well. So if Marner had a quiet final and Eichel, you know, had 5 or 6 points, kind of took over the lead, you know, I could see it going to him as well. But I think the value on the board with Vegas is certainly with Hart. But, you know, Marner would have to be pretty quiet. I think he has a pretty decent, you know, gap at the moment. He has certainly been the MVP, in my opinion, here in the playoffs so far.
Yeah, I would totally agree. One of the handicaps, Chris, specifically with Carolina, was such the layoff in between a series here and the 12 days. Montreal took advantage of it in game one, and then it's been curtain since then. Let's say this thing does end in five tomorrow night. Will there be a little handicap for you on the layoff for VGK? It is a few extra days, maybe obviously not the ridiculousness of what Carolina had to wait through. Will that play any role in how you would handicap a potential Stanley Cup final game one?
I don't think so. You know, just with Vegas and the experience that they have, you know, they've been a good road team over the past couple of years. And I know people look at their body, their work, and they're shocked that they're in the finals. But this is a team that they're just a couple years removed from winning a Stanley Cup. There's guys on that team, you know, and Mark Stone and Jack Eichel, Shea Theodore on the back end. There's a lot of experience where I think they could maybe handle some sort of layoff. I mean, that series will start for them on the road. That will be in Carolina. But, you know, ultimately I do like this team. And that's, you know, the reason I kind of doubled down against the Avs. I think, again, William Karlsson down the middle of the ice, Jack Eichel, all these guys are on separate lines. Mark Stone comes back, who had played on the top line all year long with Jack Eichel, Tortorella, who's been essentially perfect since he's taken over behind the bench, you know, puts him on the third line with Hurdle, and all of a sudden now they got three lines that are scoring, you know. So I don't believe so, but Carolina is also a pretty tough environment for a team to go in and win a hockey game. So again, like, we're kind of set up for those two teams, but I think it's going to be good hockey, tight checking, and, you know, some good goaltending, I think, on both sides.
And right now, we're seeing to be Stanley Cup champions. Carolina's minus $1.45. VGK, by the way, plus $1.30. Yes, yeah. Montreal, you still want to hop in, Chris, 30-1. I don't think you're biting on the Canadiens prop.
No, tough go. I mean, if you're going to take some sort of sprinkle, you'd look at Dobish, I think, at 80-1 to win the Conn Smythe. I mean, he's really the main reason they're this deep into the playoff run. But yeah, Anderson at plus +250 is interesting. I also think, you know, Hall, Blake, and Stankoven, those three guys in particular, that's been Carolina's best line. You look at Hall and Blake at 13 points each. Stankoven only has the 9 points, but he has 8 goals. I think if there's a long shot you want to look at for the Conn Smythe, it may be Andrei Svechnikov. He's playing on a line with Jarvis and Aho, and I see Jarvis and Aho with shorter odds. Now, they all have 6 points. Svechnikov has got a couple goals. He's more of a shooter. He has an OT winner on the resume. I think, you know, again, if Anderson struggles between the pipes and Vegas is able to get some shots, because when teams do get shots on him, sometimes, you know, those pucks do go in, where if that first line in Svechnikov could get a couple goals, you know, maybe we'll see a shorter number there. He's an interesting target when I look at the board.
Chris, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate your insight each and every week. We'll talk about it again next week here once the Stanley Cup Final is in fact set. Give him a follow on X at Chris Meany. We do have some breaking news here. Juan Manuel Cerundolo has dispatched Yannick Sinner. Remember, minus 10,000 Yannick Sinner was to win this match. He is out 6-1 in the fifth and final set. Gents, great stuff. Have a great call at Morgantown. If you want more VEASAN, of course you do. Go to VEASAN.com, the VEASAN Watch app. We've got a numbers game. Gil Alexander, Kelly Vidlin, they're coming up next.